Greetings, friends, and welcome to the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast Season 3 finale episode, where each season we slay the hordes of roguelikes by lobbing magical grenades of rating numbers at them, send the best ones of the year up the well for the end of season recap tournament, which is our next episode. I am your hilariously low-budget voice-acted host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my campfire-crowding co-hosts.
Andrew, in the hall, Harshman.
And I'm Colin, just your humble skull summoned by a necromancer, shot to fight a skeleton summoned by a different bad necromancer.
And this is Will, your 32 by 32 sprite.
Well, to conclude our third season of me conning my fellow co-hosts here into doing so many of these podcast episodes, we are talking Halls of Torment, released March 9th, 2023, as a prelude slash demo. This is something that's, I guess, kind of come into popularity recently of like, oh, here's like a demo, but we're going to call it a prelude, and I guess it is like a more fully fledged thing. March 9th, 2023, a little more than a year later, May 24th. No, wait. Same year, I can read. May 24th, 2023 is when it jumped into early access, and 1.0'd September 24th, 2024. It's been a long season. What platforms can you find it on? You can find this on Steam, you can find it on PlayStation 5, Xbox, and you can find the 2025 DICE Awards Mobile Game of the Year nominee, losing out only to Balatro, on both iOS and Android. This was developed by one, developed and published by one Chasing Carrots out of Stuttgart, Germany, who you may remember from 2015 Cosmonautica and 2017 Pressure Overdrive. And, of course, who could forget 2022's Good Company? Well, they're in good company with the 2023 release of theirs for Halls of Torment, which I think has been finally the success that they've been looking for. Halls of Torment, the corpse ball for that one rolls in on the Steam rankings at the number 51 most popular roguelike game on Steam with 30,557 total reviews. Your average player of Halls of Torment has about 32 hours of gameplay in it, but Andrew, you've encountered a glowing yellow tome surrounded by demons in which a one-sentence description is contained of what one does in Halls of Torment.
Well, in Halls of Torment, you brave various halls to, obviously you have to be tormented within the halls, I mean, as the name implies. And this is a grim, dark, Western fantasy game with a throwback visual style to like the late 90s. Beautiful, pre-rendered isometric game, and you get to take on the role of a bunch of classic fantasy classes and just wade through hordes and hordes of enemies critically in a auto attacking perk selecting screen, a visual feast for the eyes, which would can almost at times make vampire survivors blush.
That's quite the run-on right there. That was amazing.
Well, I think we all do that, though, for these.
He had a maximum of 30 minutes to get that that one-sentence description out. But, yeah, this is a good one to follow up our previous episode of Diablo 1 with, because you boot this game up, like, visual feast for the eyes. You get the flaming, heavily pixelated title, Halls of Torment, like catches on fire, and then it just goes right into your campfire town, and you pick your single hero that's available.
I did think it was interesting that I, for a second, I was like, wait, I thought this game was recent. Maybe, like, when did this game come out? Like, oh no, it's a stylistic thing. It came out like a year ago.
Yeah. That's just how true to that art style they were. In part because it looks cool. And also my understanding is that the actual like man hours required to model up a shirtless man and render him out in teeny tiny sprites was pretty fast, pretty snappy.
I thought the reason was just that it was easier to process when you have like a million things on screen at once. If that's a lot of compute required, it's better.
Yeah.
To,
I mean, I imagine
well,
that
to be clear,
you could model the main characters in all of their glory, but then you still have to kind of like tone down the 10,000 sprites on screen. So,
like, would this game be possible in like 1990?
No. Yeah. I don't think this game would even be possible in like 2010.
Yeah, there's just a lot of like. Actually, I mean,
I think you
the
need
data
like,
resolution of this. It's like I know when I open the game up, it's like this tiny little box on my screen that I have to full screen where it grows over 50 times its regular size.
I think it is like 480p resolution. That so when I put like all the 20 hours that I played this game on the Steam Deck, and it was a fabulous time. It looked great. I jump over to my 1440p monitor here. And I'm just like, whoa, that is some chunky pixelated stuff going on here. It still looks good, but it was a preview of me needing glasses in the future of like, oh my God, this is what the world's going to look like in 5 years for me.
Most definitely. So obviously, I mean, this is was developed, you know, knowing full well that this was a Survivor-like game. Do we want to tackle the how it compares to Vampire Survivors right now or save that?
You know, like that's one of the bullet points that I have here kind of to kick off that this is just like it's Diablo Survivors, but I feel like it's maybe something a little bit more restrained than that. Because I was like, okay, we're obviously going to be talking about this. Let me boot up Vampire Survivors that I haven't touched in like a year and just see how it compares. Booted it up, just like hit all the buttons to just jump into a run. And I was just like almost completely overwhelmed to start. It was already on turbo mode. I had all the things unlocked and it was just like, oh my God, like, am I just too old? Like it was like so overwhelming to just boom, jump right back into all the stuff being unlocked. Whereas I think this Halls of Torment, I think does feel a lot more restrained in at least like, and you know, maybe it's an unfair comparison comparing like, oh, the end game of Vampire Survivors to the beginning of this, but this one does feel like it deliberately takes its time a little more to stew. But yeah, I mean, like the visual aesthetic is totally different. It's like your Diablo aesthetic versus whatever kind of nightmare mishmash of Castlevania sprites or any other one.
I will say that I think that the end goal of your character growth feels a little different too. Like I always joke that the end goal of Vampire Survivors is to be able to stop playing. Like,
boom!
You
we
just
hit it.
Stand still, and everything dies before you can even see it. And
right,
then,
so
like
I've
every
been
once
timing,
in a while,
it took us only 5 minutes to mention that the goal is to not have to move your character. Which can happen in this game.
Not nearly as often.
You really can.
You can or cannot.
You can. I'll say that as someone with nearly 60 hours into it. Standing.
It's a lot
still.
More difficult because things are like firing bullets at you, though.
True.
You have to have your standoff distance has to be much larger. You have to kill them
I'm so glad
fast.
That you are bringing this up, Colin. Because
fair enough. I guess if you're just out healing.
Well, yeah, if you build for it, definitely. But it seems like in Vampire Survivors, that's kind of the almost an inevitability that you're going to get to that point where you're just standing still. And you might think, well, then this game almost sounds like it's boring. Well, hey, great news. Halls of Torment does like some interesting stuff with the gameplay to occupy your time during that kind of slow, restrained build up, at least in your first like 10 hours or so, in how your character moves and in how the game presents different quests and bits of story to you, which is very much appreciated.
I think you guys are all suffering from a recency bias. You're all saying that Vampire Survivors is crazy chaos, things are happening everywhere, this game much more restrained, slow build up. No, that's all 100% a bias and recency, because as I'll tell you what, once you get high enough level, of course, if I went back and I played Vampire Survivors now, you know, and with everything unlocked, it's going to look insane. And this game, you guys are what, you're a few hours, 6 hours
16
in,
hours
20 hours
in.
in. Yeah. So you're not, it's not quite the level of insanity. And I could say, as someone with nearly 60, that like the insanity is there. I've shared the screenshots of me just standing in a field of ring blades, just doing like it's just, it gets really insane at some point. So I'll just, I want to couch everything in that, framing here, because I
I
don't think
think
there's a difference at
I
all.
don't I'm not going to disagree with you, but I on the final end statement, I will say that you can get to the state of I cannot see the enemies because my screen is so filled with rainbows
Yeah,
in
that's
Vampire
true.
Survivors way faster. Like I will say the run that I've died in just before we started podcasting was one of the first ones that I got on with like all the agony stuff unlocked and like way more things and like a lot more XP coming in. And that was the most fun I've had playing this game because it was like the most like playing Vampire Survivors. And I say that in both a good and bad way. Like I think the build up just takes a lot longer to get there, both in terms of like physically for your character in each specific run and in terms of like the meta progression of the game.
All right. Well, we've established that they're almost the same in
Indeed.
terms of the craziness.
Well,
But in what way are
rankings.
they different? I want to highlight, of course, the controls. There's a subtle difference, which is totally optional. That in addition to moving around your character, you can aim with the mouse.
What?
You can rotate and look in a particular direction, which is appreciated.
Oh, right. You can't aim in Vampire Survivors, can you?
Yeah,
Now
no, it's all
there
auto
are
shooting.
effects that will go in the direction that you are looking or that you're moving, I should say, and your
But
movement.
it's not like explicitly a twin stick shooter control scheme.
Correct, correct. But again, this is an optional thing, and at certain levels, I imagine it's irrelevant, like which way you're facing, or much less relevant. But that was when I first heard about this game was kind of the key thing. Well, one of two key things. One, that it looked like Diablo 1 slash Diablo 2. And then the second thing that, oh, you can kind of direct where your attacks are going. And I think that that is pretty good, but I think it's equally good that you can just shut it off. And there's an option just to
It's
auto-attack.
right click, I think, to turn it on
Oh,
and
my God.
off. And I was, for the most part, I had that off the entire time because it turns out that actually aiming is like not fun, but with one character and one character only, is that like a good idea? And that was the who's the person with the rifle,
The Landschnecht?
yeah, I don't know how to say that word. So
Landschenked?
yeah, exactly.
All right.
It's
Can we
like
get the
Land Knight. Is Land Knight in German or something?
Right. As soon as you're able to
Landschnecked.
like aim across the map and just shoot like the big elite and aim directly at that elite, that's a huge advantage because you can just wipe them out before they're a threat. And yeah, that everything, every other class. Well, I mean, like sometimes like the one, anything that shoots really far, like the with the spear throwing person, the huntress, like yeah, it's more relevant. But anything that's close range, no, absolutely not. There's no reason to aim, in
Well,
my opinion.
there in the last run that I just did with the pyromaniac man in the halls of dissonance, I was like baiting big waves of guys to like come around like corners, and then I was just like, okay, I'm just gonna aim the flamethrower at like the line of dudes, and that worked really well. Like that gave me an option to engage with that twin stick shooting mechanism, as well as
Sure.
to like autopilot and be like, all right, well, I'm not gonna aim, I'm just gonna like dance in between the hordes to get to something.
Also,
So I
some of
never
the
played with
boss
auto aim.
fights, it's more relevant.
I never played with auto aim. I never even turned it on. How does it work? Like, is it just aim at the thing that's closest to you?
Basically,
Hmm.
but for boss fights, Andrew, to your point, like that mechanic of just aiming at whatever's closest to you. Well, the boss is in the very end of the game, unless you're
Oh, that's
referring
a good point.
like there's only one boss, and so like even with that Land Knight whatever character, like you just turn auto aim on and they just fucking laser fire the boss 100% of the time, and it's really effective.
Good point. All right. Well, I guess maybe this is the equivalent of like the annoying younger cousin being held the second player controller that's not actually plugged into anything. Me being able to look around and aim makes me feel more engaged. But when I want to, pet my cat or eat a sandwich, I can switch it off.
All right, so here's a question. In Vampire Survivors, Can you tell me what the difference is between the character Poe and the character Cavallo?
So
Poe
Poe,
does Poe Smelly Garlic Man.
Garlic Man, yeah. And the other one, I have no fucking idea. Nobody
I don't know.
does.
It's
You
the
brought that
dog
up
that farts rainbows or
specifically
something?
so that we wouldn't know.
Yeah,
Cavallo's, wait, is Cavallo the knife guy?
Cavallo, I think, what was it? This
He's like
picture
a
kind of
big
looks like a
demon, or is
panda
he the
bear.
axe man?
Oh, Panda Bear Man. Yeah.
Of course.
So that's a Panda Bear Man, is what, like confetti?
Starts with Cherry Bomb as
Oh, okay.
yeah, that was
Their
a
main
real shit
weapon.
ability, if I recall.
Versus Poe, garlic,
Best,
excellent.
or really, I mean, not best, but like good early game for sure.
S tier.
But I think that's like kind of a key difference between like Arca or Gennaro as your starting characters in Vampire Survivors, where it, yeah, I mean, like you're clicking them based on like the starting weapon. But like here, I feel like the classes, very much like
Yeah.
Diablo, are maybe a little more kind of upfront intelligible as the difference between a swordsman and an archer as to like what you're kind of getting yourself in for.
Well, and they actually like upgrade as you level, they upgrade different stats for different
Yes.
characters. So, and they've got different upgrade trees. So, I think there is actually some pretty big differences between how the characters play.
And I would argue that the more production value has been put into the visuals. There's more sprites,
Wait a minute.
there's
Do you
more
remember opening
animation.
up the treasure case at the
Oh
end?
yeah, what a shame. Yeah,
I mean,
that
come on.
is.
And then every once
That's a
in a while
great
we'll
point.
get the five beams. Oh.
Oh my
Right.
God,
Well,
that
I will actually
okay.
say that I think that is something that this game does lack a little bit. Like Halls
They
of Torment
dropped
could
the
use
bag.
like this chest. Maybe it's a little bit gambling in there.
Well,
They did
you
not land the schneck on this particular part of the game. When you open up the loot box, not so good.
it's missing the one crucial element of that dopamine injection right into your like the lizard part of your brain, which is the item dropping sound from
Oh
Diablo.
yeah.
Ding!
Oh.
Like, oh, that would like if that sounded every time when you get like a big yellow scroll or something, like, oh, yeah, that would be
And gem slots. They should have gem slots.
Well, not to get
What?
ahead of myself
Oh yeah.
on towards the end here, but like that's one of the things that like excites me the most about this game is like what they're gonna do next with this kind of system. Maybe like they like the developers here Chasing Carrots could probably just be like, you know what, we did this, we're done with this, that's fine. But like if this is like the Diablo 1 version of this, then if they're cooking up like a Diablo 2 version of this, oh boy, like I would be strapped in for that day one. But yeah, like there's a lot of Survivor likes on Steam. There's at least 500 plus games titled something Survivors on
Brotato.
Steam. Yeah, our very favorite Brotato game that we all loved. Be sure to
Even
go and
our
check out.
guests love it.
We previous episode Hollow Cure also a very different tone and aesthetic to
Don't
Vampire
remember that one.
Survivors and this. Yeah, you were not present for that one, I don't think.
Oh, right. That was
No.
that anime stupid looking.
But there is, yeah, there's like a bottomless pit of survivor-like games. But I feel like this one, yeah, it is of the same formula, but it feels like, I don't know, different enough to be, I don't know, like just something like better than a lot of the stuff that just kind of feels like shovelware that you see in Steam for this kind of category. But
I think the category suffers from the fact that you can make a game that's kind of like it fairly easily,
yeah.
but it actually does take work to have it be good. Like you can get a minimum viable product very fast, very easy,
It's
but
like,
I
yeah, I
demand
mean,
better than MVP.
yeah, it's like when people are like, well, why is Vampire Survivor successful? I guess because pretty colors and it makes the like the chest opening jingle. So I'll just put that in my game and get $10 million also.
Well, you
But
guys are missing like the one of the big differences there too, which is like what makes Vampire Survivors different, I think, than pretty much anything that we've talked about so far, which is the synergies between like items. You don't know when you combine the axe with the whatever it was, because I can't recall, like it becomes this brand new wonderful thing that does like way more damage or does something incredible. With this game and with all the other ones, Basically, the upgrades just feel like, oh, I am 1% better at this. I am, or you know, here's 5% more attack speed. Here's 5% more area. Like, but it's not like, oh, I found this thing and now suddenly I've combined them into this synergistic thing. Like, that's the big miss. Like, that was one of the cool things is like, you don't know what combines with other things. There's no guide to it in the game. And you're just like picking up this, picking up that, and maybe you'll find the thing that integrates them. And that was just like a really cool thing that I think that this game doesn't have. But
Sure.
that probably could have benefited it.
Yeah,
Well, hold up.
synergies strike again. Very important. Almost, it's not a hard and fast rule, but I mean, if you have synergies in your game,
Will
I mean,
likes it.
it's almost always going to be good.
But yeah, when Halls of Torment 2 comes out and you have to find the Lord of Destruction and fight off zillions of enemies, then
Whoa,
we'll
whoa,
get
whoa,
all the
whoa,
synergies.
whoa! Lord of wrecking stuff, or
The Lord of
The
Dissonance.
Lord of there was one bit of lore in this game where I was like, yo, some lore about a lord, where I was like, oh, that's kind of weak. Like it was the Lord of I don't know, paranoia or something. It was kind of silly. I appreciate that there's some like, you know, clear nods to Diablo. You know, oh, there's not the skeleton king, it's the skeleton lord, you know. But
Ah.
there were a few that were a little kind of a little goofy.
There's an actual butcher in this game. There's
Oh, is
a
it really?
I believe there's an elite and or a boss that you fight in one of the stages that is just a straight up butcher character. But
Excellent, excellent. But what I'm trying to get at is, what is the story of this game? What is our story so far, Scott?
well, you know, that is a great question because as I'm frantically scrolling through the wiki looking for stuff having to do with lore things, this game is like just like Diablo, very much set and focused on getting you in straight into the action as possible. And you know, you boot it up, your only hero option that you have is the lowly swordsman, and you stroll right on up to that giant gate in front of you, and you are thrust face forward into your first hall, the Haunted Caverns, which feels like just straight out of Diablo 1 of like these really nice looking, gosh, how do you just even describe it? Like 90s dungeon looking, isometric, grim. Dark fantasy, like grimy, like heavily chunky pixelated dungeons that it's just like, oh yeah, this is where like that Diablo 3 and 4 aesthetic should have gone. But yeah, like you're just like dumped into level one here, and then the waves of enemies just start walking at you. But luckily, the developers had the foresight to give the melee character range damage for being able to attack stuff at a distance. So your swordsman wisely swings in a big cone to do damage.
His sword is very long,
Well,
and he
that's
is
also
very strong.
then and that kind of comes into I think what Will was talking about in terms of the differences here between this Vampire Survivors, where instead of like your build being dictated by items that you pick up for the most part, which we'll talk about in a minute, the skill tree stuff that you spec out in this game can go in some directions like that, or it can go in totally other directions. So, like, as your warrior, your swordsman, your barbarian is leveling up, you'll be presented with different options to pick from. And for what is it? These are called traits, I guess, for all the specific characters. And they all have the same kind of three categories. There's weapon proficiency, proficient stance, and dedication. But this is where they kind of like give you an option at each upgrade stage of like, so what do you want to do? Like, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? But it doesn't really like lock you in one direction. So like, for example, swordsman, weapon proficiency. Like the first upgrade tier that you can get for that is either coverage, which gives you like 10% more area of like swiping cone, or you could do power, which is 30% more damage. So you can pick like, oh, do I want to do more damage or more range for your first level of upgrade for that. But you can pick again between those two options for the second, third, and fourth upgrades. So you could go all in on range if you really wanted to. Or you could go all in on damage, or you could go in a mix of both. But the very last one, the tier 5 upgrade for weapon proficiency, almost kind of forces you to make a choice based on your investments, I guess. In that, for the swordsman, you can pick blunt force, which gives you plus 100 base damage at the cost of minus 0.1 base crit chance for your main weapon, or wide swing, which gives you a plus 45 degree base area to your cone, but minus 0.2 base attack speed. So, like, there's kind of trade-offs for how you're sort of speccing your character out, and then you're faced with one big final decision of like, do you want it? Well, you want to do this or that? And then, like, with say proficient stance, for example, same kind of idea, but like your end decision is like, well, do you want to do plus 60 damage and minus 30 range, or do you want plus 30 range and minus 60 damage? And depending on the stuff that like you've built out, you could do like, you know, plus damage, plus damage, plus damage, and then do the one that does like the minus 60 damage to balance out with the range. Or you just say, you know what? Fuck the range. I'm just gonna go all in on damage and just be the short-sworded king that I am, and annihilate anything within arm's reach of me, which I think
And
is interesting.
sometimes you can go so all in on one thing that you destroy your build. Like you can, in fact, you know, there's a couple of them that they're like plus this, minus this. Those minuses can stack up real hard if you don't have something else to counterbalance. If you say like minus 120% damage, boy, sure, that's not very much anymore. But then it's like I'm hitting everything on the map, but it's doing no damage.
Yeah, but well, depending on which one of those that you pick, you might be getting a an avalanche of these kind of quest progression upgrades that you'll just be like, oh my God, how many achievements are in this game? As it just starts popping off one after another as you start playing. And if you're like me, you'll pop up the menu and start digging through this quest log and see a very cute detail for things like the haunted caverns, and the quest tracker for that is like almost kind of like a little dungeon grid map in the shape of a skull that you can't quite see what the other objectives are, because when you unlock one, you unlock like, oh, the next objective is like an adjacent tile, like fog of war sort of deal to it, which I thought was a neat little detail. And the one for the like you have those for the various levels, and then you scroll over to the one for the swordsman, and like the little tiles for the quest things are like drawn out in a little pixel sword shape, which I'm
Yeah.
like, you know, they didn't need to do that, but I'm glad that they did, because it feels very appropriate. But so, you know, if you're stacking range, you might get that swordsman quest of, oh, kill 600 monsters that are over, or what was it? I think it was one of them was to kill, like, you know, do damage to like 75 or 100 monsters at a time. And you're like, how on earth would I do that? But if you're swinging like a cone the size of like the screen towards the end of the level, pretty easy to
Yeah.
do. And you'll check mark that off.
And you can find some item that gives you like crazy extra range, or like there's other stuff too where it's like, okay, you stack this on top of this other thing and on top of this other thing, and suddenly you're like, this is starting to become more than the sum of its parts. I found that like with crit builds especially, that is the case where it's like you either go all in on it or not at all, and eventually it's just like, aha, now they're critting every single time, sometimes more than once per hit, and that gets pretty fun.
Well, this is also something interesting that I didn't know to check until I saw someone's YouTube video for it, which I was like, what the hell does force do? It's like,
Yeah.
I mean, you have some pickups that are just like, you know, do you want more damage? Do you want more crit? Do you want channeling? Do you want metabolism? Do you want regeneration? And you're just like, I don't know, maybe. And some of them have like a little like upward arrow next to them. Some of them have two upward arrows. Some of them have a diagonal arrow. And some of them you're just like, I don't know what the hell this thing does or why it's useful. But opening up your little character panel in the main menu, next to, like, let's say the archer, for example, You'll have some ability that says like launch velocity, and in parentheses it'll say range, or max duration, parentheses force, size, parentheses area, or piercing, parentheses force again. You're like, oh, that's a lot of force things. Maybe I should get some force stuff for the archer instead of just
Is that what those
damage.
arrows are?
What do you mean?
What are those little arrows that are besides like sometimes it'd be like dedication and it has like an upward side arrow. Is that what does that mean?
Those, if Will doesn't correct me before I can find it,
I
those
thought this
mean.
whole story was leading up to you telling us what those meant.
Oh, well, there's kind of two aspects to it. One of them is like, if it's like a plot, like just a straight up arrow, it will give you like a little extra additive bonus to it. If it's a double up arrow, it's like even better. So let's say like you're picking vitality. It's like, oh, this gives me like plus like 30 health or something. Like a one up arrow, and like these will vary depending on the characters, but like one up arrow would be like, it'll be plus 40 health, or two up arrows would be plus 50 base health. And then I guess like
Oh, so it's
the
like, oh,
side.
this is better than the normal one because it's your character.
Yeah, like it's just some
Interesting.
characters are just more specialized towards certain things. And you'll find the warrior is more specialized towards more HP, or the cleric, with HP regeneration, and so, or the archer with speed or critical. I forgot to, but that's generally how it works. Each character will have a added benefit for a specific thing. So if you have the sage, which is like one of the slowest characters, and you realize you want more speed, well, that 0.2 or that with a 2% increase in speed is, or no, wait, it's 20%? I can't recall.
It's 0.2 meters per second or
Yeah,
something
0.2
like
meter.
that.
Yeah, like that is like much less than the, like, I think it's like 0.4 or 0.5 for the archer, but like you still need speed. So you sometimes just like, all right, I'll take it, even though it's way shittier.
Well, also crucially, the one I think you're describing is like a global speed, like movement speed modifier. And there might be abilities that you pick up that are impacted by that. Or you might have like archer specific traits that you are offered that's like, well, like if you pick this one here, that's going to give the archer character specifically like plus like 50 move speed or something. You're like, whoa, that's much bigger than the other one. Maybe I should pick that. But like those other things, those other options might apply to like other abilities and stuff. So it's like, do I want to invest more in like the player character specifically, or do I want to invest in the things that might affect like some OP ability synergies that I got going on, kind of a deal.
Right, or all of the ability traits that you can get, which are usually like much more powerful, but they apply only to the specific ability. It's like you could get the one that's like plus six attack speed for everything, or plus 6% attack speed for everything, or plus like 20% attack speed, but only for your golem who punches stuff and then rolls around every once in a while.
But yeah, so as you are progressing through the haunted caverns and killing waves after waves of skeletons, toxic slimes, skeleton mages, teleport mages, imps, hellhounds, and so forth,
Little hellhounds.
you will be offered some elites who will like fly onto the screen, and you'll see like purple effects and like little AoE things to dodge.
And they have health bars, so you know it's serious.
Yeah, you're not going to be rolling over 60 of them at a time, kind of a deal. But it looks like what, like every like eight minutes or so, like 6 or 8 minutes, you get a boss that comes in, and it'll be like the imp chieftain or the skeleton lord who come in, and it's like, just it's an elite fight but with some more danger to it. And typically when you defeat them, they'll drop one of these ability scrolls that will give you an ability, which we'll talk about in a second, or an item, which I think this is an interesting mechanic here with the item stuff, that like you have some equipment slots that you can kind of start out with. But in order to get more items, you are limited to sending one of them back to town, up through the well that's on each one of these levels that you start next to. That gives you, I guess, technically the ability to purchase it on one of your next runs. So in theory, like if you're like, well, damn, I don't have 30 minutes to waste here, you could just go and fight the first boss, see if they drop an item that you have not picked up yet, run it back to the well, send it up, and you're like, all right, now I can go do my taxes or what have you. And then you can play with that item the next time. So you're not
And you
explicitly.
permanently have that item once you send it up the well and you pay the one-time gold cost.
Oh, hello. Thank you for buying my
He
item
should be
here.
paying us for these items.
I'm guessing that you guys have not completed. None of you have gone to the vault, so you don't know
No.
what happens with the guy who sells you the things.
I do because I read it on the wiki.
Okay.
Oh,
But yeah, so.
well, that's a nice teaser. I better keep playing.
Yeah, well, I guess I mean we always spoil these things, but I guess Andrew, if you're planning on I won't spoil it for you, but
Well, I'll think about it.
for the deep lore that is Halls of Torment.
Indeed. Which, regarding the lore, I mean, there is, as you start, meeting the different NPCs and you start sending NPCs back to town, there is some lore to be had, and it does involve some greedy spellcasters, going down into the depths of the halls looking for untold
When you say
power
there's some
secrets.
lore, some is doing some pretty heavy lifting there.
There's that the lore exists.
Minuscule shavings of lore.
If you
Well,
compare that to the rest of the genre, the rest of the subgenre, I feel like there's a lot more happening here, and I think there's
that's fair.
it
I
is
guess it's got
appreciated.
more lore than Vampire Survivors, which is,
Well, I don't
No, I
know. I mean,
disagree.
Really?
I think it has maybe like 60% as much lore as Diablo 1.
You think?
Because, and I say that because,
Because, yes.
like, so you fight your first boss of the Haunted Caverns. You kill him, and you're like, "Hooray! I've done the thing!" And that unlocks the next level, the Ember Grounds. A lot more fire enemies here, and some interesting kind of like gimmicks and stuff going on. So. Notably on this stage, this is one where that you can rescue the well keeper who, so this is contingent on like, all right, you gotta beat that first stage. You get here, you rescue the well keeper, then you can start sending the items
Yeah,
up.
you could rescue the well keeper and all five of his animation frames. I love how chunky and low frame rate the speaking portraits are for the NPCs. It is perfect. If you've ever played like Fallout 1, where only the important NPCs get little speaking portraits, it's great. Love it. Perfect. No notes.
Yeah, it reminds me of like N64, like
Star Fox.
talking portraits.
Yeah, or even just like the little portraits you see in like StarCraft or
No,
something,
no,
where
no.
they're just
Well,
no, even it's not even as good as
not even
that.
close.
If it was the yeah, you take the StarCraft portrait and you reduce it to like 2 or 3 FPS or something, like it's much, much chunkier on purpose, of course.
Well, as you rescue the well keeper and you buy more and more items from him, another neat little detail is that he will start to become like more and more like decked out in like expensive looking clothes and gear
Oh, I didn't
over
notice
time.
that. I didn't notice that either.
Oh,
That's funny.
yeah.
Like
It's pretty funny.
he'll get like a little gold crown and then some like gold rimmed glasses and then finally some like pompous looking big silly hat kind of a deal, but yeah, there's like dialogue about you go and talk to him and he'll talk about like some of the other NPCs that you rescue, like the cupbearer or the scriptor, who you rescue on subsequent levels. So like the Forgotten Viaduct, the big long bridge with haunted souls that it is bridging over. That's where you rescue the potion man, the cup barrier, and the frozen depths is where you rescue the scriptor, notably by going and like setting fire to it. So he needs some sort of like fire damage ability to break him out of his little ice prison. But bringing out like this is another kind of like progression system of the game where like the cup bearer will allow you to have this amulet that you can equip that will sort of like very like nebulously point in radar directions. Like, oh, there's like an ingredient over here for you to go to pick, and there's one over here for you to go pick. And you pick up these ingredients to get like you're basically like you reroll and banish options for your different abilities and stuff. I feel like this kind of comes a little late, but maybe provides some good replayability of like, going back to different stages because what's it? You got one, two, three. You got like five different of these potions here. That some of them, well, there's like two ingredients on each stage and then one on each agony version of each stage. So it does give you some incentive to like, all right, I'm gonna go back there. I'm gonna go get the thing. Got the thing. All right, I'm done here. Quit out. Great. 5 minutes. Didn't need to run the whole thing unless you have a good build going. But these will give you your rerolls, your banishes, your save this one for next time option. And I forget what the other ones do, but those kinds of deals. The Scriptor, who is your hooded figure who comes to town, is kind of almost like your in-game encyclopedia of the items that you've picked up, but also allows you to apply permanent meta progression upgrades to the individual characters once you've defeated various hall bosses.
Yeah, imagine if Brave Adventurer gets to the bottom of the Tristram dungeon and slays Diablo, and the Soul Stone for once was actually a good thing. Yeah, the bosses in this game drop these shards, and the shards can then be used to permanently empower one of your characters. So you've
Meaningfully empower too.
so is it?
A
I've
whopping
been hoarding mine, so I don't know.
0.5% increase in one stat
It
for
adds
one
up.
character.
It adds
Uh-oh.
up.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Is
Well,
that like 0.5% per level or just 0.5%?
0.5% per stone, per stat, per
So
character.
once you get the upgrade to fight three bosses at the end, the bosses drop two shards each, and then suddenly you have like 75, 100 of these shards, and then
Yeah,
you
all
can
right.
like increase your attack speed out of the gate by 25% or
All
increase.
right.
Yeah, so it's like it
Very
gets
good.
significant.
But I'll say that for the first 15 hours of the game, it does not
Oh,
feel
absolutely. Yeah,
significant.
it's a complete dog shit for the like for most of the game. Yeah.
Like, I feel like this guy honestly shouldn't exist until after you start getting those upgrades. Like, it feels like it's, oh, here's some mechanic that feels so underwhelming because this meta currency is so
Yeah.
paltry at first. Like, you're telling me now, like, I feel like 15 hours is a pretty long time to have played a game in general. Like,
Well, you would be
but I
missing out
guess
on
not.
you'd be missing out on the Scriptor's highly important dialogue about the Wellkeeper, where he says, "I
Oh.
know many stories about men relentlessly chasing riches, as if their path to wealth was a divine prophecy. Not a single one of those stories ends well. I fear for his soul." And you'll have to imagine that like each word that I'm speaking is like one different animation frame. But I fear for the well-being of those around him even more. So there's like,
Thus ends the lore of this game.
Hey, you know what?
No, no,
For
no.
a $6.66 indie game,
Oh,
which
devil.
again, top tier meme pricing, I gotta say.
Wait, hold on, though. I want to go back to story. You guys were, when I said that this game has more story than Vampire Survivor, you guys kind of shouted me down. What story is there in Vampire Survivors?
I mean, I think at this point with like how
I
like
think the fact that it has even
well,
like a couple of voiced lines already means that it wins.
Colin, have you played the Contra DLC for
No.
Vampire Survivors? Very important. Yeah, I don't know
Where?
what they're talking about either. I kind of nodded like I knew.
I
Yeah, what's
mean, like
is vaguely Italian?
the lore behind the Eudaimonia machine, like where do we even start? I mean, like the Vampire Survivors itself is just like collapsed in on itself into the singularity of like what is even happening in this anymore
If you
that
pause any image of this thing on the screen and you count out where all the enemies are on the screen, it actually does spell out in Morse code a deep and
what?
enriching story about
No.
Italian
You have
vampires.
to remember that there are missions, and I don't remember the specifics at this point. It's been what a year, half. I don't know how long since we played it, but like I remember, there's one point where you're the Garlic Man, Poe, right? And you're like running through like it was like a special level, and like there's
Oh
things chasing you,
yeah.
and there's like, and I don't remember the lore around, but there was some reason why you wanted to do that, and there was some story around that. There's also a bird that if you unlock it, the bird was significant in some way, and like the different
Yeah.
levels have different like stories around them, so like
I feel
different
like
things.
it really both of these games stretch the definition of what lore is. There's like lore versus setting.
I just
Like a
appreciate,
story. Eh.
sure, but I appreciate that there is some obvious context for like what I'm doing, and each run the game, whether it be through the quests or through tracking down ingredients, it
Yeah.
gives me a reason to be doing a run.
I
Whereas
think this game does a lot better job of like giving you a reason for you, the player, to be doing a specific run.
indeed, and something that I struggled with Vampire Survivors. Like pretty quickly into playing Vampire Survivors, I was Googling like, all right, well, I've unlocked all the levels. Like, what? Unless I want to go like achievement hunting, which is not really my style. Like, what do I do? And that's what led me to doing some of the weird, wacky stuff like you were describing, Will, with running down a hallway and things flying around and birds. Indeed.
I don't know what it is about Quest, but Quest makes me want to do it so much more than achievement.
Totally.
Like something about the way that this is in it's integrated into the game makes it feel more impactful than just like achievements.
Yeah, like if you had told me that like oh, in order to unlock the Exterminator class for this game, I would have to go and kill 1,000 enemies in the Ember Grounds. Like, if you just told me that, I would just be like, nah, this sounds super boring. But if you told me like, oh, if you play the Ember Grounds for like 10 minutes, you will happen to kill 1,000 enemies, and then like, boom, your next character is unlocked. I'm like, okay, sign me up. I feel like when I was first playing this game, the little quest thing that popped up at the top, and when you check the quest journal, was very much like unlock driven at first. It was like go and defeat this character or like beat the boss for this level, survive for this long, do the like do this thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm very motivated to go and do that thing. And then at some point, like I don't know what happened, but like it flipped to like yeah, doing like do kill 50,000 imps or something. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. Like, do I like what does that? What does that do for me? Oh, 2,000 gold. Like, eh. I want to like unlock the stuff. Give me more thingies to play with.
There are two categories of unlocks that I mean, like, I don't know if you moused over every single unlock possible like I have, but like they're either gold or there is some actual tangible thing, which might be like, oh, in the upgrade path for this character, you will unlock this category of things, because otherwise previously you'd be capped at like, you know, only proficiency 4 for whatever the bullshit is, right? And so it seems like that stuff isn't, I don't know, it seems important.
Yeah, I mean, like, purchase an item from the Wellkeeper, and that gives you, like, that unlocks another item for spellcaster gloves. Like, defeat the Worm Queen unlocks the Warlock. I'm like, okay, yeah, tangible, focusable things. I sort of wish that, like, the quest, like, mini map thing that you have for either the characters or the halls was maybe a little bit more explicit with that of, like, all right. Go and do this, like, I don't know, what's the phraseology for like this tangible action to do this thing versus like this passive stuff? Like, I know that
Or
there's one
a
that's called
lifetime
like
objective
it's
versus
yeah, it's
a
lifetime achievement.
milestone or something.
Yeah, lifetime achievement is one category versus like within a run do a thing. And that's, and I know this because that's what I'm looking at right now for my own game. But like, yeah, that's the very specific like difference. And yeah, I think like generally it does those very well because it guideposts me to be like, okay, on this new map that I unlocked, great. What's this thing that I can go and do to have more toys to play with? And yeah, so like with you know, we talked about for each of the stages unlocking the different camp NPCs, but you'll unlock different characters along the way as well. Like we kind of talked about just a minute ago, the Exterminator, the Warlock, you got your cleric, the Shield Maiden, the Norseman, the Sage, our favorite Landsknecht, The Beast Huntress and the
I'm pretty sure
Sorceress.
it needs to be Landsknecht.
The
Landsknecht is
mansion.
definitely land snail.
Well, based on my movement speed in that one run, that would apply pretty well. But all these characters, I like how different all these characters are from each other. I think they all have different uses, and some of them also, like, we talked a little bit about, like, oh, like, as you're progressing your build, you can, like, pick more damage or more range or do this thing or that thing. Some of them also have, like, different weapons specifically that you can kind of push upgrade directions onto. So the Land Knight, I guess we'll translate, has two weapons. She has, like, the super powered rifle, and but she also has, like, AoE grenades that she throws, and you'll do, like, one attack with one and then the other attack with the other one. And like Will was pointing out, like, I was stuck on the Forgotten Viaduct for a while because the Hydra boss was just destroying me. I'm like, well, you know who could do some big damage from big range?
The land snail.
Land snail.
Yeah.
And like all good land snails, you have a an arquebus, blunderbuss type rifle, or you have grenades that you can spec into. And so I was like, well, I'm just gonna dump all of my stats and stuff into this super powered rifle, and then for the abilities, use those as, like, the AoE backup stuff to just take out all the mobs. That Hydra didn't know what hit him. It was just sniped from across the map, and I'm like, "Yep,
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a
that felt
great feeling
great."
too,
Like,
right? Three
yeah, like
heads,
that.
you just go bazinga,
I mean,
bazinga,
that's that rare circumstance where you're actually aiming and you're just, like, standing really far away. You're looking at that thing in the distance, and then you're just, like, absolutely murdering it, and it's very satisfying.
But so yeah, so some of the characters will have, like, the swordsman just has a sword, archer just has the arrows, exterminator just has the flamethrower. But Beast Huntress has a spear and a doggy. Shield Maiden has a whomping attack, but also a shield bash attack. And one of the quests for that was, like, do some number of damage with just the shield. And, like, then it became kind of a puzzle of, like, well, how do I do that? And then it sort of unraveled itself to me. I'm like, okay, I can see where the systems are coming from here. It's a very different feel than Vampire Survivors, where, you're like, I'm gonna level up the garlic to maximum level, and then I'm gonna get the clock stopping thing to maximum level, and then see what wild synergies pop out of that. It feels very more, I don't know, role-playing tech tree system here, RPG tech tree system.
It
But
does feel, it feels more like playing Diablo. Like, it feels like you are playing as a character running around in a fantasy world, doing fantasy things. Like, there's a lot more enemies than a Diablo, but not that many more sometimes.
But the
Sure.
abilities that you can pick up range everything from phantom needles to frost avalanche to ring blades, meteor strike, the Kugelblitz. You got
Golem.
your spectral fists, prismatic cascade, the clay golem, all sorts of fun stuff that, like, for all intents and purposes are very kind of similar to the pickups that you get in Vampire Survivors.
Indeed.
But like, work pretty well. And I'm curious to get the rest of the crew's opinion here. Like, how much did the items that you wound up unlocking dictate the kind of play style that you wound up doing? And I'll start with my example of, like, well, I got some items pretty early on that were very much scaled off of burn. And so I picked the fire bat, I hit that stim pack, and I'm like, all right, it's time for some propane, PAIN. And I was stacking up on flame strike, stacking up on dragon's breath, anything that did fire damage on top of that. And so I had, like, boots that left fire on the ground. I had a crown that did, like, for every enemy that's on fire, you gain plus stuff. I'm like, let's do it. Let's burn. And it was great. Like, the whole screen was on fire. And then I had another item that was, like, transforms your main item to fire damage. And I was like, all right, well, we got to test this out on the archer. Switch to archer with, like, maximum attack speed, and kind of just apply to the same formula. of like do massive fire damage now that everything is on fire from the main effect thing. But I'm curious from other people's perspective, like did like the items that you unlock like dictate that kind of play style for you, or was it more sort of ability driven?
100% item driven. I mean, once you have that, like you'll do a run, you send up one item, and later you just set up two or three. Once you have some unlocks, but like you send up one item, suddenly you have a new item. You want to use that new item, then your next build's sort of like your next
Like,
playthrough is
all right, yeah, let's see
based
if I
on
can
that.
use it.
Yeah, you want to use that, and like, and then eventually, like, and you use it to its fullest extent. And like, there's a lot of achievements that are based on using things to like no matter what new thing you just got, if you use it to its fullest extent, you can like get some other unlock. And so to use it right away is to basically allow yourself to have the maximum opportunity for whatever unlock is related to that new thing you unlocked. And so I don't know, it just made sense early on in the game to always use the new thing you unlocked.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the crit rings are pretty good. That makes it fun. Like, all right, I'm gonna do a crazy crit build,
Well, you
which
start
I
with those though, right? Like the one that's like plus crit probability and then plus crit damage. Like those are two rings that you start with, right? Maybe I misremember. I remember like, there's like the things you start with are like the glue elements, if I recall. Like they're good
Yeah.
across all the builds. And so more crit damage plus higher probability for crit are like glue sort of things. Whereas fire damage things, like Scott was mentioning, that's a very much a specialized sort of thing.
Yeah,
So
or
you
like the coat that is, if you have slow or fragile or whatever applied, apply that to other things nearby. That coat is extremely useless unless you are building your build around that. You're like, all right, I must, if I'm going down wearing this crazy coat, I must get the weird needle thing spikes that inflict that. Otherwise, this is an entirely wasted slot.
Scott, I had a similar loot experience to you where I got some of the fire items. And so I was playing as the Exterminator Firebat class. Although before that, the game kept dropping for me like summons items, which I don't know. I really was not interested in those. And so I just ignored them. Furthermore, this whole item system I really appreciate because, again, it gives you a tangible and important goal other than just, inflicting maximum damage and killing enemies. So instead of just wandering aimlessly through the level, you find a good piece of loot, and then it's like, all right, now it is my mission to get it back to the well and secure this item for my future runs. Which, yeah, I think is, great design. It's good stuff. And I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to talk about how great of a pyromania experience the Exterminator class is. This fella, or this NB or probably is dressed up in a wonderful plague doctor mask and a full head to toe dope ass outfit, a nifty little hat, and a wonderful, vaguely steampunk kind of bronze flamethrower device. And these effects are just perfect from that late 90s pre-rendered flame experience. And you couple that all together with the active abilities that you can get that are also fire themed, the dragon's breath and some other one, I forget what it is. And it is just a delight to be just torching all of these beasts, very cathartic. Whereas, I've been so accustomed a lot of my gaming life to having to hack apart demons and skeletons with swords, with bows, with magic, but now I have the opportunity to take a flamethrower to them, which I just love. It's great.
Or just like a straight up gun.
Or just a straight up gun. Yeah, just in general, I think that all the individual classes are really like well done from a presentation standpoint, and just how they feel and look, and that is a lot better than, oh, I don't know, a potato.
But is it better than a dog that farts? Rainbow Firecrackers.
Just
Okay,
barely.
That was one character, and nobody plays that one.
How much did people engage with like the individual hall? Well, I guess we'll call them, well, they're listed in the wiki as secrets. I guess I would say like features, maybe like gameplay features of each of the halls. Maybe I don't know how much like of a do or die this is on higher agony levels. But yeah, Will, do you have a any opinions on
yeah,
these?
100%.
100%.
Every single map, at a certain point, you know what you need to do. Like in the beginning, it's like this mystery of like, oh, there's this weird thing. It's going to have a bunch of really slow text to tell you some lore, and it's a bunch of bullet. I don't read any of that crap.
Excruciatingly
and then
slow.
You're like, oh, okay. Well, there's some blood that runs off in this direction, and you trace the blood.
Well, spoilers.
And like, oh, yeah. it's great.
I'm kidding.
And
it's
and
fun.
So you do that objective for that one side, then you run back, and then you run down the other side of the blood trail, and you're like, oh, now suddenly I've got this beating or this heart of whatever the fuck it was, and makes the boss easier. And it's just like, well, if you can make the boss easier by just doing
you can
the
hammer,
thing,
hammer the heart of Lorcan and damage Dagoth Ur.
Yeah, it's like, what else are you gonna do? Like you're like
you said it.
That's the thing, is like you have objectives, like as a character in this map, you have places to be. Like otherwise you would just stand in one position and you would absorb all the experience.
Ooh.
And it would be extremely effective because none of the experience would be evading you. Whereas with this game and all these vampire-like games or vampire survivors-like games, you have to go someplace and do something. And they want to give you objectives around the map of places to go. And this stuff gives you something to do, which also benefits like the end game. And so no matter what level you are, if you can complete the stupid little objective that the map has, you know, oh, follow this stupid crow until it like finds its thing. And then, yeah, whatever. I'll just, you know, I'll do that. And then suddenly makes the end easier. It's something to do, you know, otherwise you're just like, you know, I'm just sitting in one position doing nothing.
I will
it
say
is
the,
something to do. But to answer your question, Scott, I engaged with it so far as I tried to follow the crow several times and I failed. And then the secret objective in the frost caves led me to a fight I was not prepared for.
that's
unfortunate.
That's
but yeah, it's fun environmental storytelling, dare I say it, with, you know, somewhat limited tools given the presentation of the game. But as you say, Will, it's great because then you've got something to do and you're not just staying put.
Colin, did you ever enable the activate the Dissonator monolith?
No.
What?
I could not figure out how to do it, and then I forgot. I don't know what it is.
I think
is.
You mean the Dissonator.
I've
Star
only
of
played
Providence.
That level twice, so.
Oh, well, that makes sense then. It took me like a few times before I understood that you just like the ones that you that are around that you don't have a laser pointed at them do nothing. But as soon as you find the one that has a laser pointed at it, you just point the laser at where the arrow is, and they all have arrows, and so
they point the laser at where the arrows.
Yeah,
so you move
so
the
laser hits the thing. And then that thing deflects it in a different direction. And there's an arrow right next to that thing. And if you just tap it, it like changes clockwise its orientation.
Oh, okay. I guess
so
I never
just...
realized. I didn't see the tap.
Yeah.
By the time I got to there, I was already like, I feel like these objectives, you kind of have to do them earlier in your run while you can still see what's happening on the screen.
Yes.
Like, there's 100%. Like, it might take a while and then like, but eventually there is a lot of chaos happening on the screen and it does become difficult to do like the quests. Like I can't follow the blood trail anymore because I can't see the ground.
That was a problem. That is a problem.
Yeah, the Dissonator monolith was like, I think I must have walked past it 10 times while trying to beat the Chambers of Dissonance the first time. And I was just getting rocked every time. Until like I looked at the little quest log and it's like, oh, there's like this thing called a Dissonator mono, like great name number one, that does like massive damage. I'm like, maybe this will help.
It's
and so I'm well like it
almost
helped.
No damage actually in the end game.
It must have been some sort of psychological boost then, because this was me like running my fire bat around in circles like around the Dissonator monolith, like having that like zap enemies while I'm doing it. Was probably like the giant AoE flame damage that was actually doing the real bulk of the work here. But whenever like an elite or like the final boss would spawn, like having that thing just like bam, like zap him down to nothing. Like, haha, I've gotten my revenge finally on this stupid level. But that felt pretty good. Like or the ember grounds where you're going and finding like the cracked ember eye to get an elite fight, and then you get some MacGuffin from there. Or the forgotten viaduct that makes the end boss for that stage not have an invincibility stage, kind of stuff. So there's like little things to do for each of these stages that are quite welcome. And it sounds like I'm guessing these scale for like having to fight three bosses at once as well.
They're inconsequential, to be honest. But like you just kind of do them because there's nothing else to do when you're at the highest level. You're like, oh well, I found the thing, so sure I'll do it. But it when you could just stand in one place and have all your ring blades kill everything on screen, it's really not important. So yeah, there has to be that kind of meaty zone where like the difficulty and your ability or your character's ability is in that perfect sync. Then it's great, but like once you have too much of an ability, it doesn't matter.
Will, give us your cracked build recipe for the good listeners.
Yeah, well, I mean, for all the maps, there's a one, or at least I think for all the maps, there's one unlock, which is like deal 500 million damage. And that's in the game, it seems like a lot really early on when you're doing, less than 100 damage per hit. And eventually, yeah, so the Sage is one of the characters that they don't have an ability, like they don't have like a sword hit or anything. They just use like all the extra abilities, and they're the first one you pick is their main ability, and they get extra stats for that. And so there's this thing I noticed, ring blades, and every one of my runs where I picked that one, it seemed to have more DPS. And so I'm like, well, let's just push everything into that. And turns out that that is an auto win for every single context. And so if you choose a Sage and you're able to survive the early game where your speed is super slow and they just run up to you and they just kill you immediately, as long as you can get enough speed to escape them for a little while, yeah, you do I mean, as I mentioned before, we got on this over 1 billion damage in some cases. And so it's an insane amount of damage, and by the end of it, you don't even have the accoutrements for the stand in one place to get bonuses. You don't need that stuff. You just stand in one place though, and suddenly everything dies. Nothing even enters your vision. And so that's
You're just like a StarCraft carrier
yeah,
surrounded by your
that's
spinning,
I thought
whirling
it was
blades.
interceptors everywhere. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Yeah.
I did think it was interesting that this game does not calculate damage dealt based off of characters, like your or based off of the thing that you're hitting. So like most games, if you hit a thing with 100 health, you can't it won't log as having done more than 100 damage. That is not true for this game.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure.
Well, I mean, I don't pay attention to that
I'm
stuff. You can
almost
overkill
positive. Like,
things and get credit
I
for
think you get
all of the
credit. Like,
total.
yeah, if you hit something that has 100 health with something that does 10,000 damage, I'm pretty sure you get credit for the 10,000 damage. Because, I got you get the deal 10,000 damage in one hit achievement. And I hit like some random mook. I did not hit something that had 10,000 hit points.
And you just atomized him. You turned him into a fine mist.
Yeah. The first time I did it, like a successful stage run, I hit like all of the I got a gazillion of those damage related achievements. And I'm like, I don't think that I could physically like I don't think I killed that many more dudes than I did on a previous level. I can't have done 15 times more
Well, you do
damage.
you. If you, as soon as you kill someone, and this is my understanding, I don't actually know this is the case, but my belief here is that as soon as you kill something, and there's supposed to be a certain number of creatures on screen at a point in time, then another one will spawn. So the faster that you kill them, the faster they spawn. Is
Yeah,
that
but it'll
how?
tell you how many creatures you killed, and I didn't kill that many.
Okay, I don't know if that's actually how it works, or if there's only a set amount that
This
spawn.
was the one that I was like ultra crit build and lightning, so I was more limited. The problem I had with this build was less the amount of damage I could output and more the number of distinct times I could output that damage. Which is like I am doing like 10,000 damage per hit, but each one hits only one specific thing. And so I'm like, everything I hit dies in one hit. But there's more guys coming in, and so I have to like dodge around a ball.
So this is a complaint though, because I and this might be just a user error sort of thing, but because Sage plus Ring Blades seems like the winner in every circumstance, I'm not really sure like what are there other ones to compete with? Maybe if I choose any character, they're able to output the same amount of damage, but under different contexts. I have not found that to be the case. And so it basically means that on the landscape of all the different characters and their total DPS output capabilities given best conditions, it seems like there is a very different level for each of these. And so, like, yeah, your S tier down to your F tier. I think that's kind of the way this game works, just like with other games. And like at different stages in the game, like that will have a different effect early on versus later when you have all the items and everything. So, that's kind of an interesting element, right? Like over time, the things that was good might not be so good at the very end. And so there's like this ever-changing environment where you have to make decisions about like what's good for your context. And I love that stuff.
What's the maximum torment level that you can play on?
Five.
Torment 5. And is there like, I'm guessing there's some sort of unlock or achievement for beating each stage on Torment 5 of some sort.
I'm not sure
Wait,
if that was one of them.
Agony 5
Yeah,
or a
Agony
Torment?
5, but like there's is there Agony and Torment?
I think it's the
Is this
Shrine of
anything like
Torment.
Ascension levels?
Kind of.
Yeah,
I think
Slay the
Torment is how
Spire.
many of those items that you have that you start
Yeah.
with, which I don't know how. I think you can have unlimited number of
No,
those.
there's like 20 or 30 items, I think, that are in total, and you have to get every one of them.
Well,
But
but
the
like
Agony is up to 5.
you can use up to five.
Well, Agony, honestly, I don't know what
Agony,
Agony
like,
is or what it does.
it like happens over time.
Yeah, exactly. But what does it give you? I have no idea. But Torment is just like the number of like actual like ascension levels in Slay the Spire, because we have to use that with terms. That's the one that we have to think about.
Well, the actual end game is governed by you purchasing 30 items from the Wellkeeper, who then mysteriously disappears from the camp. And
That's fun.
in his wake is left a little dribbling trail of gold that I believe, Will, correct me if I'm wrong, leads you to the vault,
Aha, precisely what it does.
which is the final stage
All
of
right,
the
spoiler alert. The worst
game.
stage.
In fact.
Sure, go ahead and spoil it. What happens?
No, the worst stage is not a spoiler. Yeah, it is a spoiler. Sorry.
Oh.
I can't say anything.
Wait, what's the worst stage?
The vault.
Oh.
What do you not
Is it
like about
boring?
it? It's the structure of the map is extremely confined, and yeah, you can beat the boss in 5 minutes. And so it's just like all these achievements about being in there for 45, 50, minutes or whatever. It's just like, this is just bullshit. Just, hey, can you stay in this area and stand, like literally I'll alt tab. My sage is sitting there in the middle of all these ring blades, and I don't have to worry about him at all. He just kills everything. And then I wait, and then, oh, I'll tap back. Oh yeah, 48 minutes have passed. Great. And then, so it feels like it's an afterthought sort of a level. Like there's not enough level design here to keep it so that it is interesting. There's one boss in the middle, and that's basically like there's four different things that you have to like break down on like the kind of eight-ish sort of chambers around the middle, and there's the middle. And so you just kind of like roam around the outside, and then you're like, okay, now I have to sit here for another 40 minutes, and then you alt tab. And so that was my experience.
Well, it was the
But
best
that's not
level.
required, right? That's like
Yeah, it's extra credit.
some kind of fancy will level achievement that I wouldn't dare attempt. But yeah, that's a little disappointing to hear.
There's a cool like there's a Diablo-esque animation, like a cinematic at the very end,
Oh, really? Oh, that's
which
fun.
is decent in Diablo terms. And so I mean,
All
or the
right.
480p or whatever the fuck it is, and like, hey, it's pretty mind-blowing for like, 1980 or whatever it is,
Nice.
1990 maybe.
Bring your friends over after
Yeah, exactly.
school.
Like,
Like,
hey,
I
watch
unlocked
this
the
thing.
cinematic. Oh, wow, let's watch it. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like to expand on what Will's talking about a little more, you go and like instead of the other levels where like you have to fight through 30 minutes to get to the stage boss, This one you can just go boom, go and fight immediately because you just go and activate the four twisted pillars,
Wasted.
which unseals the Lord of Greed. And then yeah, I guess you kill him in 2 seconds, and then you're greeted
He
with
says, "Hail and well kept."
a
He's a well keeper.
He dies and drops the gold coin, which rolls into this thing. I don't even know what the details are around this, to be honest, because it looks like it's a whole other thing, but it never really.
And then he jams the gold coin into his forehead and wanders off to the east
That
seeking salvation.
I would love that if that
Now we're
was like
talking.
actually the end game, like the Diablo like nod where he stuffs a coin into his head. Oh my God, I would love that.
All right. So I would like to talk about the long shadow that Vampire Survivors has cast in solidifying and making standard 30 minutes for a run. It's too long. And it's like, I'm not like hating the time that I'm spending with these types of games, but like I keep looking at the timer and I'm like the first time I was when I started playing this game, like the first time I consciously checked the time, I thought like without taking an extra moment to think about it, I glanced at the time, I saw 10, and I was like, oh, well, this must be negative 10, obviously. It's now counting up because I've been playing this for so long. It feels like I've been playing this forever. And no, it turns out that I'd only been playing it for 20 minutes, but it felt like 40, and almost every run that I'm doing, it's just like I get to the, I don't know, like the 15-minute mark. I'm just like, all right, come on, let's
Here's a
pick it up.
solution.
Here's a solution.
Yeah, I think one of the first, if not the very first, torment items you get, artifacts, is, as Scott I think pointed out in our Discord, like reduces the time from 30 to 20 minutes. And
Yes,
it's, I don't know, it's either
Oscar.
or
Just play 15 hours of this game first, and then you'll of the more boring parts, because it's definitely playing the game is less interesting.
no. This unlock that so it makes it 20 minutes. It makes the enemies faster. It makes you faster. There's other like it makes sense that that is unlocked later because you have to like gain basic abilities and how the game works until you get to that point, I think.
I feel like that is the opposite of how many games have worked in the past, which is the better
Building
you are, the
skills so
longer
you
it
can use your
goes.
skills. Sorry, say that again.
The in almost all like arcadey style games, the better you are at the game, the longer you play the game for.
That's a bad
Versus,
design.
no, you get to go further. I mean,
Well, I said that because I just wanted to be
that's true in even Slay the
contrarian,
Spire. If you're bad at the
but
game, you don't get to play it as long because you lose, and then you start a run over again.
well, it
well,
depends on the type of game, I suppose. But to the game's credit, it sounds like you
I
do
yeah, I think
eventually.
30 minutes is too long for the starting
Yeah, but
finish.
what I appreciate is that you can, go in and complete objectives and then just end the run. Like you're not stuck in it, which
Maybe
I
you
very
can, but I
much
can't.
it is
Must me complete.
hypothetically
That is
possible
not
to
how
do
my
so.
brain lets me play video
I
games.
stay
All
till
right.
the end every
I get what
time.
you're saying. I get what you're saying. It's still like sort of locked in there. And that's great to hear that there's an item that brings it down to 20. I think the worst example of this, and who knows, maybe it's changed because like I don't think I played the actual final version. Oh great, I'm not even gonna remember what the name of this game is. It's
What is it
called
like?
it's it, it's the Vampire Survivors, but like retro FPS game, Scott. You know what I'm talking about? Like
Is this Crimson
Bloodshot.
Land?
I don't think it has land in it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This game, it's 30 minutes nonstop of just blasting, like first person blasting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of it. It is just awful, like for the
That this
30 minute
year?
mark. I believe it came out this year. And but so I'm glad that it's not quite as painful, but I'm glad that we're generally in agreement that Vampire Survivors having set the standard to 30 minutes was a little much. And it's good to hear that the game has some things that mitigate it, sort of, unless you're just as zealous as Colin, which I respect. Like the game tells you, here is the amount of time, and you feel compelled, like, oh, well, I wanna rise and meet the challenge, of course.
Quitting levels early feels like you're giving up.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of achievements which are related to you staying in. So, like,
Yeah.
so even if you have achieved all you can, you've sent an item up and you've done all the upgrades. The one thing you haven't done is beat the Lord. And as soon as you beat the Lord, no, 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 you earn the, what is it, the fucking heart or the shard or whatever it is. I don't know. It looks like a heart. I don't know what it is. But then that's the meta progression 0.1% upgrade or whatever the fuck it is. The almost meaningless thing. But as soon as you have a lot of them, like I said, you get plus 25% attack speed, which is actually extremely significant. So every time you're compelled to stay to the end, you get that 0.1%. I don't know what it is. A 0.1%.
0.5%, but 0.5% only for one character.
For one, no, and that's not true at all. Actually, every character has the, you know, I was confused by this as well, so I understand why you would think that. But you, every character gets however many shards applied, so all of them can use the same shards. I know you're looking at your eyeballs.
Oh,
are all
so
over the place
each
right
character.
Now.
So if you got 10 shards earned, each character would have
every
10
character.
shards to apply.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
that
that
makes a
is
big difference. Yeah, I know.
Significantly better.
They don't tell you this. That's
no,
the communication is a problem there. Yeah, they don't tell you that.
Okay.
A thousand pardons. I was trying to figure out what game I was talking about earlier. Bloodshed.
I thought you were talking about Impaler, but yeah, that does sound familiar.
Yeah.
Crimson
Land,
Bloodshed, Impaler.
Will, are you saying this is how the game handles it or how it should handle it with the shards?
Is.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that either. I've
all
been,
characters.
Oh my! Thank you for
from,
telling me, because I've literally been
game.
Like sitting, like waiting, like all right. Well, I really need to figure out which character I like the most.
Yeah,
so
I have like
shards.
9 unspent ones
so
because
I've
didn't
holding on to
know
them.
What to do with them.
Yeah, it's confusing, and I'm glad to have told you all if you continue to play the game.
Thank you,
that's...
thank you. Now the game does a good job. I think a great job. The lore so deep. the character, the NPC tells you, it's like, oh, when you bring these shards to me and I will use them to empower you or whatever. And so like I was like motivated and excited to go and, you know, kill more bosses. Well, that's great. That's a good job, game. That's a good choice.
That's
but
really
the
guy.
Five,
That's
annoying.
The guy who should become the bad guy.
The scriptor.
The one who's like, give me all your shards. I'll make you stronger.
No, it's the capitalist, which makes perfect sense. You've got this like indie game development
it.
Studio that's been, you know, putting out games and putting in hard work and doing an honest job, making an honest living in ye olde Germany.
In the code mines.
In the code mines. And, you know, they just, you know, want to be recognized for their good work. And, hey, they finally did it with this game. Which had a pretty short development cycle, is my understanding. And from that game conference, there was a video from a game conference that Scott sent out to us regarding this game, a sort of a retrospective. And my understanding is that their plan was, all right, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's stop making these huge projects. Let's do some smaller scope projects and put out a bunch of them and build up kind of this nice catalog. And well, developers, too bad. This was too successful. So now you're stuck just making sequel upon sequel of action RPG survivor-like game.
Well,
yeah.
Could be worse. Could be worse fate.
Real quick before we start winding down here, the music is great. I'm just going to point that out.
Yeah, pretty good.
Even all the times where I was getting like bludgeoned to death, I was just like, yeah, this is some good like dungeon synth, like, borderline like metal pipe organ music with to perfectly accommodate the rolling balls of corpses that are chasing me that I'm lighting on fire. Yeah, feels very
did you get
appropriate.
the bard?
I did not. I well, that's contingent on beating the game, where I have not unlocked 30 items yet.
Well, scrub, I mean, there's a lot more to look forward to.
Will looks so disappointed.
Wow, that was out of
I mean, I
expect, come
on. I mean, I expect that you of all people, not in the Scott gets the limited disdain. You get the maximum disdain because.
Oh no!
I mean, there's a bard character with, as Scott like highlighted it. Like, I'm not sure if that was your abilities. It looks like you just kind of copied and pasted from someone who actually did the work. But like, it was something where, like, yeah, it was like the bard abilities where it's like the mosh pit and the whatever the. it was. Like, it's all very metal related.
You should be disdain maxing because there is a bard ability called
maxing.
The wall.
That's a curmudgeonly thing that I would do, definitely.
That's one of my favorite abilities to get for the Beast Huntress.
He's disdain pilled.
But famously, one of the bard abilities is the Wall of Death, which for those of you who don't know, is a style of mosh pit where you split the mosh pit, you split the crowd down the middle into two
and
halves.
Half of them die.
And then the two halves charge at each other. Not unlike in an American
football game. So
half of
them do die, though.
Half of them are deceased, yes. And the last, significant one that I was in, I ended up colliding with a fellow who I talked to later. He was fine, but I ran headlong into a guy wearing one of those like inflatable costumes, and it was that of an axolotl. Not unlike the previous episode, aka axolotl. But anyway, so the bard is the final unlock, and does that feel like a good reward for having beat the game?
I hate the bard.
Okay.
Well, it would have been the best. I mean, I feel like Sage should be the final unlock, yeah.
Probably.
It's the one that's like the meta commentary on the game itself. It doesn't have a main weapon, it just has the abilities.
I mean, probably, but a bard has his own individual attributes, which like kind of set it aside as its own special thing.
Bard should be a secret one where you have to like...
Yeah, it felt like it was the secret one to some extent.
Well, there you go. I haven't unlocked
if I could suggest a reward character unlock, I feel like a tried and true fun unlock is that, you get to play as one of the enemies.
That's exactly what I was thinking. As soon as you said what should happen, the enemy,
my brain immediately went to a dog farting rainbows.
great minds. Wait, what?
I'm sorry, I can't get over that one Vampire Survivor guy.
I mean, there's a bottomless pit of ideas that
there should be a character where you're playing as the dog and you have a human companion.
but like the same movesets, like it's just some scraggly human man running around on all fours.
But that wouldn't be lore appropriate to the Diablo universe. It should be an eight frame directional cow instead that rolls around and moves at people.
That would be great. Well, there is a DLC tab, and if we don't already have a bunch of great DLC, I'm sure we'll be getting more for this game.
There are already two DLCs for it, right?
I think there's only one, the Boglands, which...
The Boglands? What is up with developers putting out swamp-themed DLC as like their first foray into DLCs? I can only think of one other example, but I mean, come on, that's not an exciting place to go. The Boglands. Do we know, Scott? Do we know what plans Chasing Carrots Studio has?
That is a great question. Probably some podcast host somewhere has done elaborate deep research into roadmaps and all those things. I would imagine that this game could probably get some decent DLC drops to it. But I feel like there's, and maybe I'm showing my hand a little bit for ratings here, but it feels like this game kind of feels feature complete for what it's going for in terms of like Diablo 1, the roguelike, or you know, the survivor like. If they just take kind of like the Diablo 2 step to this, maybe it doesn't have to be a survivor's like game specifically, that could be like, I think they have a lot of they have a lot of good ideas and directions that they're going with already. So I don't know what's on the roadmap for them. I wouldn't be shocked if it's just more DLC, but
Boglands only came out like a month ago. So
yeah,
I feel like they can just like rest on their laurels for a month or two before they announce the next thing.
And hey, they deserve that.
Also, the Bard came out as part of the Boglands update. So that is perhaps why it feels a little bit like a weird special character, because it is a special character. It's like a free update patch that was accompanying the DLC.
I see.
Should we rank? Should we judge?
Get those torment shards out.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's time. Yeah, time to kick off our last ratings for an individual game until we get to the Omega Bowl next
Wow.
episode. But yeah, I guess in classic worst to first, who's going to kick us off for the worst, most tormented, agonizing rating that we have here between Will and Andrew?
Wait, who is worse? I haven't seen it yet.
It's you're the
Well,
same. That's why. That's
yeah.
the
Oh.
joke.
Like
Like that's the
you guys
joke.
rated better than us?
I
I guess
know. All
I guess
right.
technically it would be Andrew because the overall spreadsheet has him rounded to the first significant
Wow.
digit.
Well, and we know Andrew's not really ranking us on in on the same scale, so
Wait,
he
what? I
Yes,
haven't
Colin,
heard
thank you for
this.
mentioning that. Yeah, listeners, you need to be aware that my co-hosts, they decided, that once, as soon as I got acclimated to the wacky, weird ranking system, I thought, hey, they're numbers, guys. So who am I to question them? They suddenly switched it, and my numbers got like ported over, and they're just a mess. And We might have to switch it back soon so you can continue this bit.
behold,
Yes.
10 years from now, same bit.
Behold, I it was foretold, and it has come to fruition. Somehow we are going to be giving this an overall average higher rank than we gave to Diablo. Shame on this podcast. This is an outrage. And even the developers, I think, would just be oh so bashful and embarrassed to learn that a publication, a digital pod publication such as this, reviewed this game higher than the classic. The classic that is Diablo 1. But anyway, hey, The Exterminator is great. This game I really enjoy. There is a ton of beautiful, wonderful stuff going on the screen. There's such a lovely variety in the environments, and there are so many different monsters on screen. Whereas in something like, Vampire Survivors, it is a single sprite that is kind of bobbing back and forth and maybe has like a few frames of animation. In this game, you've got eight directions accounted for all of these wonderful creatures, and they all have unique animations and cool design to them. A lot of them have unique bespoke move sets, which is very nice. And this game does tap into my love of shmups and bullet hell type gameplay at times, which is
Like
much
Bullet
appreciated.
Heaven, though.
Sure, but you are having to do a lot of dodging at times. At
Okay,
times,
that's fair, yeah.
and that is you might not think that you want that, but I assure you do, listener. So go ahead and check this game out. It scores 7.98 Andrew points, right ahead of Elden Ring, Nightreign, and right behind Balatro, coming in as my new number 13.
I guess that makes it me. I'm looking at our spreadsheet right now. The standard deviation here is
Yeah.
0.1. We're all very aligned
It's
on where.
the least standard. I mean, this is giving the. Well, we can't talk about this yet until after Scott and I go, because we're
Oh
just
yeah, okay.
spoiling our scores.
Well, you're right. Let me just never mind. And I gave it an 8 out of 10. And the reason I gave it an 8 out of 10 is because Vampire Survivors has 8.5 out of 10. And I don't think this game is quite that good, but it's stolen 60 hours of my life. So I have to give it something. And it definitely feels like it's a good game. Feels like it's a great game, in fact. And I recommend it to everyone who's as dopamine deficient as I am that needs this hit all the time of that dopamine. It just accomplished so much, and variety of characters, variety of things to do. The progression is extremely intuitive. Oh, well, except for the things we pointed out, it's very intuitive, and I enjoyed the entire time playing, and I'm glad to have played it. So, yeah, 8 out of 10.
Guess that means I am next. I didn't really know what random number to put on this because I was like, well, it could be as high up as here, but it could be as like low as down there. But I wound up settling on an 8.1. I need to give more eights out as we go along, which is just behind Balatro and just ahead of Jupiter Hell on my leaderboard. Yeah, I think this game, when I first played it, I'm like, oh, this is like really good. And it stayed good the long, like, as I kept playing it. Like, there aren't a lot of games that we've covered where, you know, the more that I play them, either I continue to enjoy them the same amount or get better. But this one was one of them, and I was glad to stick with it to beat all the different halls. The criticisms that we point about the runs being just maybe slightly too long, I think I agree with for the most part. There are times where I'm like, oh my God, I need more time to satisfy all these objectives. But if there was just like a turbo button or just like unlock the final boss for this stage now, I'm ready for it. Just give me it. I could probably use that. Yeah, I think the art style for this is great. I love the sprite work, the aesthetic that they're going for. They just absolutely nailed it. The music works really well. The overall theme and aesthetic, it feels like it doesn't feel like it's trying to be as too over the top and silly as Vampire Survivors is. It feels like it's very much taking itself as seriously as a survivor-like game can. And I think there's a lot of really smart game design principles that are in here for a $6 indie game. I think like the quest design system is good. It's got a good drip of like stuff to do. All of like the progression unlocks for things are at a very good pace. And yeah, I think an 8.1 feels about right for this.
And I guess I'll bring us home with a very different score of 8.2. I was kind of surprised I was the highest of us. I will say that I increased the score of this game for myself by about a point in the last 36 hours. I thought it was like a pretty good game, but like a little slow, a little bit like lacking in something that little je ne sais quoi, but I really do. I think it's getting better as I've unlocked more stuff. Like the chaos is growing, the like skill required to play it, and the like cognitive load is increasing. Like I think that's my biggest problem with the early part of the game is that you c it you're there's just not enough enemies on screen. You can kind of go wherever you want with without too much effort versus like. You have to start making like moment to moment decisions once you get to like the agony levels and stuff like that. So I think post agony levels, post like beating all the levels, I think that's when it really starts to shine. Now that we're all here and have finished up with all of our rankings, we can say that this is the least standard deviation of any game where all four of us have rated it. We basically all gave it the same score, which I mean genuinely says this is a pretty darn good game.
For this season, but there
No.
is no there. There's one that outranks it in terms of agreement level.
But Andrew wasn't on that one. This is the
Oh,
highest
I see what
one
you mean. Yeah.
of one where all four hosts have scored it. This is the least deviation by
Yes,
a large
that is true.
margin.
Yeah, the last one that we had such a large agreement on was Blueprints from way back when. But
Yeah.
yeah, this one is maybe like three
We
times as
all agree
much
that this game
of
is almost exactly an eight.
a
It's a very good but not phenomenal game.
Well, I mean, like on our ranking system,
It is not
overall.
a genre inspiring game.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. I mean,
It
like
has
that.
not we're not going to be calling things
It's not a
Torment
genre
likes.
inspiring
Yeah,
game. Oh, what, like Diablo 1?
Torment like is not going to happen.
Right. Well, Diablo 1's bad, so that's
Oh, man.
pet, 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 pet. But yeah, I mean, like Halls of Torment ultimately on our overall podcast rating leaderboard. Enters the town portal at the end of the day at the number 12 ranking out of 85 games that we've
wow.
played for this, which it's
Not
nothing to
bad.
sneeze at. Like that feels pretty good, a good accomplishment for it. I mean, it's just behind Noita and just ahead of Blueprint, so good
I
company.
think it's a high enough score that everyone should play this game, regardless
Yeah.
of if you think you like it or not.
Definitely. Some similar games to Halls of Torment. We talked a lot about, well, our just a previous episode to this, Diablo, our previous episodes see our Vampire Survivors coverage and Hollow Cure for similar Vampire Survivor-like functionality. But there's a dearth of other survivor-like games that people are. I think this is like the short list of ones that are actually good and not shovelware between Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, people like a lot. Death Must Die, I think, like, people like that game a lot. I think the voice acting for that is abysmally bad, but maybe that, you know, that might be a draw for some people, or maybe the art style. But I don't know how to really pronounce this one, but like Rogue Genesia, Genesia, is one that I played a little bit about for I think the demo for. And that one also has some very interesting gameplay designs behind it. I'd mentioned earlier Crimson Land is almost like a top down. It's more of like a proto Vampire Survivors top down horde survival twin stick shooter. So less of like the giant waves and waves and more of kind of like individual chunky missions. There's a one called Picayune Dreams, which I can only describe as if like Hideo Kojima had directed a Vampire Survivors like game. It's about the only way that I can sum up. And then there's one by a guy who's put out some actually I should probably put two of them on here. This one right afterwards. There's Void's Vigil, which is like a sci-fi survivor-like game that has a very similar art style to the other game that this fellow has developed, called Boneraiser Minions, which is as Halloweenified as you could get for a Vampire Survivor type game. Very fun to play during spooky season. Very trick-or-treat encoded to it. But yeah, I think that's gonna wind down
20 Minutes to
season.
Dawn. You didn't mention that one, but
Well, I'm mentioning the good ones. I mean, you
oh
know
yeah, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
that. Yeah, 20
Got
Minutes to Dawn.
all
Again,
of
there's
them.
500 of these games on Steam
Whoa.
at the very least. There was a talk that I gave at Roguelike Celebration, I think in 2023, that I wound up cutting out a whole bunch of slides having to do with the rise of survivor likes because there were too many to cover. And I think at the time, let's see, we got Choo Choo Survivor, we got Time Survivors Prologue, Fantasy Survivors, we got, what are some of the bad ones here? Neon Survivors, Zombie Survivors Number One, the YouTuber Survivors, Sea of Survivors, Mini Star Survivor,
Survivor Survivors.
Cubic Survivor.
They should make a Survivor game where all of the characters are just other Survivor-like games.
I'm surprised they haven't taken the IP from the TV show and applied that on here. So there's yeah, a literal bottomless pit of games similar in this genre that we could take another 3 hours to go all the way through. But season three, we did it. We survived yet another, oh, I should add, yet another zombie survivors. That's us. That is us surviving season three here. Oh, and Soulstone Survivors too. Why not? Well, I'm just gonna name them all. I'll fix it in post. Don't even worry about it.
Which means, what do we have in store for our next episode?
Well, our next episode is everyone's favorite. Is the recap episode where we go through and talk about whether or not if our thoughts or feelings have changed on any of the good games that we have played throughout the year. And yeah, kind of shocking to see how, like, I usually pull like a snapshot halfway through the season. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can kind of see this. And then it's always different at the end where I'm like, I did not expect this game to be there. And one consequence of this is, as I'm reading hot off the charts here, I think Halls of Torment has just booted Blueprints out of the first round buys
What?
of the Omega Bowl and shot it
Oh,
down to the wild card round. So we'll get into it next episode,
as a
but
mistake.
yeah, there's some wild nonsense. There's going to be coin flipping. There's going to be
Hey, what's number one?
well, currently
Whoa,
leading
you can't be. Come on.
Well, currently leading the overall bracket for this season of Omega Bowl 3 is our now number two total overall ranked traditional roguelike, Caves of Cud. And it's going to be a bloodbath of
What the
us
hell are you talking about?
it's going to be a bloodbath of us shouting at each other, going to be a good time of us yelling.
Hey, man. Wait, that's not number one.
Number two.
It is the number one for this season.
Oh.
Slay the Spire was last year.
Oh, I just assumed that that was, something that's timeless. So
you just assumed.
Yeah. That it was somehow. Spire.
Like, turns out we don't have to do it,
time
boys.
And space.
Slay the Spire wins every year from now on.
Well, instead of presented by DraftKings, it can be, you're drafting your cards from Slay the Spire Kings in this case.
That is a fair point, Will. I mean, in the Super Bowl, it's not like the grand champion is. Is kicked out of the final match.
Well, the 1984 Chicago Bears are not coming back for the Super Bowl this year. As
I played
far
more Caves of Cud this year than I did play Slay of the Spires.
Oh my
heresy!
Goodness.
So
I
mean, this is
only for Will is at number one every year
until Slay the Spire 2 comes out. This is a good preview of what you're getting next week with us.
Slay 2 Spire.
Slaying
Indeed,
each other's.
Yeah, critically, we made it to the end of our season without Slay the Spire 2 coming out. Which surely would have been a big upset.
Yeah.
Well, exciting times. Yeah, get ready for us to be more argumentative than usual next episode.
No, wrong. We won't be more.
Yeah, and I mean, in the meantime, you still have 2 weeks, if you're listening to this now, to send in your emails to grogpodzone@gmail.com. You can send whatever final messages you want for the season at our Mastodon grogpod at gavedemp.place, and then you can see all the stuff that we got, all those things, all the above, grogpod.zone. That's the website. It's your one-stop shop. Yeah, we got a lot of real fun listener letters for each of the games that that we'll be talking about in that bracket. And yeah, we'll be going through those. We got some other fun stuff for post Omega Bowl, some good interviews from PAX, and maybe a special secret interview that is coming up as well. So keep your ears peeled for that. But yeah, until next time on our next Omega Bowl 3 episode, keep your ears peeled. Peel those ears as the demons get those ear peelers out to have you listen to the dissonant sounds from the chambers of dissonance from halls of torment.